Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Look, our life and our working life are like a journey. We're always going somewhere. But where exactly are we going? In fact, where are we actually coming from? We don't know where we're coming from. We don't know where we're going. We're a little bit like a broken sat navigation system. So this is all about outcome-focused leadership, having an eye on the destination and working out how we're going to get there as a leader, ourselves, our team, and our organization. So you've got to come back to me as I talk to the wonderful Kishore Jayaraman, who's currently the president of Rolls-Royce in India and South Asia. Don't miss this episode.
During constant change, your leadership has never been more important to create a better and more inclusive world. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast for the insatiably curious to explore the power of human-centered leadership to create real momentum for positive and sustainable change. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors as we discover that success leaves clues. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
Hey, Kishore, welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Adam, and thank you very much for having me here. Pleasure to be here.
It's good to see you because you and I have chatted a few times before this episode, so I am glad, A, things are a bit better now in India, that you are all good and well. And I'm looking forward to this episode because we wanted to chat to you for some time about outcomes-focused leadership. But I want to go backwards first. So just tell us a little bit about your story, because there's always a story before you become the president of Rolls-Royce in India and South Asia. Just tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I'll try to make it as short as possible because you don't compress half a century into a few minutes. But regardless, look, I'm originally born in Chennai, India. And I sort of I did my graduation in India. Then went to the United States, immigrated to the U.S., I've lived in the U.S. for a period of time. And during all this, you know, my education was partly India engineering and then master's in the U.S., followed by a stint in GE, where I spent about 16 years in the U.S. And then I came to India to run the GE businesses in India, the energy business in particular. And then I, you know, sort of after 7 years in India with GE, then I moved over to Rolls-Royce in India. I've been with Rolls-Royce for the last 9 years. So my career spans about 33 years. And during this time, I have been in technology. I have been in business development. I have been in projects. I have been in commercial. And currently, I'm in business leadership for the region.
You see, that was straight away, you've done a wonderful job, Kishore, which is why I abdicated responsibility for that precy over to you, not me. I've got questions already on that. I mean, you've worked in different sectors. You've worked in different regions within different cultures. How's that benefited you, having that ability to experience different sectors and different cultures for you now as a senior executive within an iconic organization? But how's that benefited you, that eclectic mix of experience?
Yeah. So what I did not mention a little before is that I was in the steel mills, I was in port handling cranes, I was in energy, I was in aviation. Right now I'm in aviation.
Yep.
And I've been in marine, and I've been in defense, and I'm in power systems. So yes, the sectors were very diverse. My career spanned through diverse domains. And currently, the beauty of this diversity, I believe, is what has brought me to become the leader I am today.
Right.
And so we all talk about diversity today a lot, and we talk about gender diversity predominantly. But I do believe that diversity in every form is a must for every individual to experience life.
Yeah, that's important, isn't it? That's something that I'm hearing a lot from senior leaders and organizations. Build a culture of inclusivity in order to actually have yourself a transformational workforce. And I think that's what you're saying, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. And to add on to it, I think, you know, you look at people who have capabilities and you don't look at domain expertise when you're looking for talent to bring into the organization. Domain expertise is very important in certain areas, but for overall leadership, the diversity of training is very important.
Now, I want to come back to the fact that you were at GE for many years, and obviously you would have had the experience of the wonderful Jack Welch, who is quoted by many as a leader, an iconic leader, as someone who had a very strong point of view about leadership. What were some of the things that you took away from being, you know, part and parcel of his vision, of his leadership journey, and part of the GE story?
Jack believed completely in being concise, right? So, and what concise means is being able to gather all one's thoughts,
yep,
assimilate all the information, and have the clarity about what you want to communicate, right? So the key learning for people in GE during my days there was that you should know what you want to achieve. You should know what you want to say in order to achieve what you want to achieve, and do it very quickly, because time is of essence, right? So what it gave me was clarity of thought. And in order to have with the clarity of thought to communicate very concisely. And number three is to achieve what I went in to achieve with that communication or the conversation.
And really that takes us to the theme of this episode, which is outcomes-focused leadership. So yes, give me your thoughts about that, because obviously that's a combination there, isn't it, about vision, clarity, determination. What is your thinking as a senior leader now, but what does outcomes-focused leadership mean to you?
To me, what is very important is there's got to be a vision for the company. So the company has a vision which every employee has to align with.
Right.
And okay, that's the bigger picture, and that's the broader statement of what we are all here to do, so that we are all together and doing what we are here to do. But then the next step is to break it down so that we are able to take that to the next level, which is to have milestones, which is to have clear metrics, which is to have a clear direction, and then make sure that there is enough mechanisms in place to measure everything. Because if we want to have an outcome, it's easy to say, here's the outcome, and wait on it for a few years. But if the outcome has to be executed in, let's say, 6 months, then I think we should make sure within 6 months how it's broken down and how we're going to achieve. So to me, the difference between when I started my journey at GE to my present status,
right,
clear end goal, broken into milestones to be achieved, clear metrics around the milestones to measure it. But in today's world, do it quickly. I love the phrase in today's world, which is fail fast.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably something that's so important, isn't it? That you've got to do, yes, what you described, but at double the rate. Triple the rate, yes, of speed. Have you, yes, found that things are getting faster and faster, especially during a pandemic? Or are you finding, well, I don't know, you tell me, are you finding that you're having now to work, to decide, to initiate things at breakneck speed?
It depends on the individual. It's a very, very complicated question, but I'll try to see how I can, you know, bring it to the fore. People are probably working a lot harder by working at home or working from their, you know, spaces. When there was an office, there was a routine, a rhythm, right, in the life of the human being. But today that rhythm is broken, because in the middle of, you know, work, there is life. And so work and life are so intermingled that if one does not carefully split it out, they end up being unproductive, and they also end up being more stressed. So is there a play on the mental health because of the way of working during this pandemic? Absolutely, yes. Right? I think in the past world where we all had office space, where we all said 8 o'clock I'll be in, 5 o'clock I'll be out, as long as it's an outcome-focused effort, 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 does not matter. But if you don't have proper outcomes and you are measuring it by the clock, then work doesn't get done.
Right.
But in today's world, if you don't put the proper metrics and put the proper outcomes, because of the inefficiencies created, there's a third dimension, which is the mental health of employees that also gets impacted. So I think this outcome-focused leadership is absolutely essential, but we have to make sure what are the ingredients that are going into the pot, and always not forget that people are the ones who has to take us to those outcomes.
Yeah.
And so it's a question of how do we take people to get to those outcomes, given the varied scenario in the middle, which is a work-life balance.
Do you know what?
So it's gotten very complicated. To be honest with you, it's very complicated.
I'm going to pause this here because I think you've just mentioned something that's deeply important, is that when we talk about outcomes focused behavior, outcomes focused leadership, when we were working 9 till 5, Monday to Friday, I'm simplifying by that. Yes. In some ways, yes, that gave us some natural structure. Yes. When the pandemic came along, it destroyed, yes, the natural structure. And as you rightly said, our work life and our home life became inextricably linked. In some ways, many people said, yes, that their working day got longer because, yes, there was now. So how have you and the people that you lead navigated losing that structure to still remain outcomes focused and disciplined and direction, you know, having a key direction still?
So there are two factors to this, Adam. One, right, is the individual, and then there's a team.
Okay. Right?
As an individual, I think for myself, I make sure that I pace it properly, right? And I just balance it in terms of how I separate my work and life.
Right.
So for example, morning someday, I say it's all going to be work, right? So I'm not going to be disturbed with home stuff. In the afternoon, sometimes I say I'm going to be focused on work. Mornings, okay, if I'm interrupted, I can balance it. So there's got to be some separation, a time that has to separate it to focus, mm-hmm, right? But needless to say, the inefficiencies are, I started about 8 o'clock, go till about 8 o'clock in the evening. But yes, I've gotten a few things, other things done. Now, when it comes to the team, what is most important is I got to be careful that the team members have the same thing. And so when the team members have the same thing, I have to appreciate the fact they're probably in the middle of home and life, or they're probably at work, or they can do the work. And because they're reporting to you, they probably say, okay, fine, I'll pick up the call. Boss is calling.
Yeah.
And that only puts additional stress on them. So I got to be very careful to give them the confidence and the comfort that we are in a very strange situation. So it is okay to say, I'm busy now, I'll call you back.
Right.
Or when we schedule meetings, yes, we have to be prompt and accurate, but when we schedule it, and plan everything around it. And not just back-to-back calls and back-to-back video calls. And so you don't have any time to take a breather. I think it's very important to balance things and then have a protocol established within the new spaces that we operate from.
So Kishore, as a senior leader, have you found that you're looking more at output now rather than the rhythm that's gone, the 9 till 5, the Monday to Friday, because perhaps you are not physically in touch with people as much as you used to be? Do you find that you're now really allowing people to navigate that for themselves as long as they can still deliver the output?
One of the things, to be honest, because of my early on Jack Welch and GE days,
yep,
I think, it's always been outcome focused, right? I mean, we are as good as what we deliver to the company has been a mantra with Jack Welch. And so when you look at this pandemic now and we have this work from home and all the hybrid models, for me, it is still the same. So I just look at the output. And how people achieve them is different now. And I probably have to be more empathetic about the fact that things are different. But it's not like even before there was a drumbeat where I would say in the office, come and report to me this or do this. There's a understanding of this is what we got to deliver. There is a deliverable that is there with a timeline fixed to it, broken down into what needs to be done intermediate. And then the intermediates are looked at. So I think I do the same thing even today. So I say, okay, we got to do this thing. And for example, to come into here with my communications director, I said, I got to do this with Adam. And she said, okay, Kishore, here, we got to set this up. And you set up a rhythm as well. We follow the rhythm. Here we are. So it's about being clear about, look, here are the things we need to do to get there. Here's what you're doing. Here's what I'm doing. Here's how we measure it. We're done. So the pandemic to me is not a big difference, except the fact now, once in a while, my wife will call me back in or somebody comes to the door, which are all things I'm not used to when I'm in the office.
Well, Kishore, that's your boss, isn't it? There we go. Who will ring you. And if she rings you and tells you you need to be somewhere, quite rightly, then you need to be somewhere. Yeah. Do you think that the pandemic in some ways has pressed the big pause button on us all and has perhaps change the ways of working fundamentally for people going forward? I know you're navigating that really quite seamlessly, but do you think for a lot of organizations, this is a seismic shift for them moving forward because people have had 18 months of pausing, stopping, reflecting and reconsidering their value proposition. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, look, I think a lot of companies will not be so driven by outcomes. Right? Yep. Every company talks about outcomes. They are driven by it to a large degree, but then they are probably not very, you know, sort of a methodical approach doesn't come into it. So for them, it'll be a little harder to get to a new rhythm through this pandemic. But otherwise, I think at the end of the day, it is very important to understand people will rise up to the occasion as long as they believe in it. And if you are able to give them belief that this is the reason why we are doing what we're doing, I think it's a natural evolution that happens.
Yeah.
But as the world also moves forward, I believe hybrid will be there for the interim, maybe a year or two.
Right.
But after hybrid, eventually, something tells me that we'll get back into workspaces. And the only reason is networking is a very, very important thing.
Agreed.
When it comes to building teams and bringing people together, whether it be in a bar on a Friday evening or lunch during a Monday, Monday lunchtime, or Wednesday if you're having some team afternoon, you know, chill sessions. So all of these bring people together to bring them all to understand each other as human beings. And I think that is what has been missing over the last year and a half. So that will bring people together more, but eventually that will again converge into bringing them more into offices. So I think, you know, a couple of years down the road, once we see the backside of this pandemic, people will start using the office more and more. By the way, I say this because even today, a lot of our employees, they want to come back into the office.
Right. They miss that human proximity.
They love the hybrid thing, but right now they want it. They really are saying, why are we not opening the office?
Well, we're creatures of habit in some ways, and we're humans, and we want that human connectivity, that human proximity, the spark, the innovation, the creativity, which of course it can happen virtually, but there is something special when we're all in a room together. And perhaps I'm playing to my own bias there, Kishore, but I certainly crave that again in moderation. I want to ask you another question. It's about adding value and about how someone considers their own personal value now as we start to come through and one hopes out of a pandemic. I know when you and I chatted a few weeks ago, it may even be months ago, Kishore, because I've lost track of time.
Yeah, I know.
And I think you mentioned something to me, which I made a note of, about stream, river, ocean. And I think you were talking to me about the connectivity and how we can add value, but we're part of a bigger picture. We're part of a bigger ecosystem. I think as we come out of the pandemic, a lot of people are going to be asking themselves a question about what is my own personal value proposition? How has the pandemic challenged that? And how do I find my space as we start to go back to, I'm using the word normal, but that's the wrong word, Kishore. And how have you as a senior leader also reflected and considered what is your value going to be moving forward as a senior leader within such an iconic organization?
I think the one word that will define it is empathy.
Right.
I think it's very easy to get lost to saying that here are the outcomes, and so I got to deliver on them, so I got to work on them, and you've got this multiple things that are happening at the same time. So you just go one to the other, to the other, to the other. And then soon enough, you've forgotten that, look, there is this new world that's evolved where people's thinking has evolved into a very different space.
Right.
And so I think I will look at things in a more empathetic manner. And, you know, sympathy is always something that's there with everybody, including myself. But empathy is something that is forgotten as we do business and we get caught up in the everyday matters. So I think there'll be more of an empathy as a whether we go back into the office or whether we stay at home and work, empathy is something that I carry forward from this pandemic.
Right.
To a very large degree. The second thing I carry from this is that it is extremely important, and it only solidifies my belief that outcomes have to be clearly defined and understood by everyone to do their jobs well. And so, but throwing in the empathy factor into the outcomes and then having this thing a little bit more people-driven, and having people come raise up a little bit higher,
right,
I think will be the new world that will work in. And office space or home or wherever it is, the tools are plenty these days to stay connected. Yeah. Even though human beings love the physical connection that happens when we meet each other, but tools are available to be connected all the time.
Now, Kishore, you may know I'm passionate, and a lot of my work and my book was based on human-centered leadership. So my question is this: you have enormous technical capabilities that have allowed you to move through organizations and take on extremely senior roles to the point that you are now. Do you find yourself, though, relying much more on human-centered capabilities, such as empathy, vigilance, curiosity, building inclusivity, personal purpose, than opposed to your technical skills? So do people that you lead, which are many, and they're all over the world, I'm sure, do they come to you more for the human-centered Kishore than the technical Kishore?
It's very interesting. You know, I'm here with you, Adam, today. I just was coaching one of our employees this morning who wanted to, you know, just check in with me and ask me a question about, is he doing the right thing? Should he continue with the job or should he look at new career opportunities? You know, not because of anything, but because he was kind of soul searching for himself.
Right.
And we had a long conversation. I spoke to him for about an hour and a half and we had a good, decent conversation about a lot of things. At the end of which, you know, he said, you know, Kishore, I'm here talking to you because I know you're my boss. And if this conversation can go somewhere where it might hurt me, right, that I'm trying to leave.
Right.
And the only reason I came here was because I trust it won't happen with you. And I trust it won't happen with you because you're a decent human being.
Wow.
And if at the end of the day, after all my leadership travails, I'm able to say that, you know, here is a good human being. He was a good human being through his entire career.
Wow.
I think that's enough. That's all that is required.
I love that as a story. And I've got a question for you, Kishore. When he told you that, how did that make you feel as a seasoned senior executive with all of that ability? How did that make you feel?
My heart was full. It felt really gratifying. You know, there couldn't have been a better phrase to be used to say thank you.
Wow. Do you know, I think that's become one of my favorite stories from the podcast, Kishore, because
yes.
It goes right to the heart of what I've been talking about for so long, the human-centered leader, not the technical leader. The technical was almost taken for granted. The human being is what you're describing to me. And there's a phrase, isn't there? Kishore, none of us may be remembered for anything that we say or do, but we may well be remembered for how we made people feel. And that's why I asked you that question as well. As the president of Rolls-Royce, India and South Asia, how did that make you feel? That's amazing, isn't it?
Made me feel really good. Made me feel really good.
And how?
Really, yeah.
And taking that example and that experience into account is, for you moving forward, how important is it for almost for you to radiate that out, for you to multiply that through your leadership team and for them to multiply that through the people that they lead as well? Almost that there's a ripple effect of this human being over human doing.
I think the greatness of companies comes from the fact how they treat people.
Right.
And that way I'm very privileged, right? I'm very privileged because I work for two iconic brands and currently I'm employed with Rolls-Royce and I'm very proud and privileged to be here at Rolls-Royce because I think they put people first, right? So it makes that human-centric leadership a very easy task,
right?
At Rolls-Royce, when we had the pandemic, it was people first, and we have been conducting calls, reaching out to employees, making sure that we're able to provide them with facilities during the pandemic in different parts of the world. So it was like making sure that people understood that we care for them, right? And I think if every leader looks at their employees and says, we care for you, and just don't say it, but mean it, there's your human-centered leadership.
Agreed.
Right? It's a difference between saying it and doing it. And I think, you know, in my future, as I go forward, look, I've been doing this for a large part of my career.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm very happy to have heard that this morning. But as I go forward, I'll definitely try to multiply, try to keep doing the same and keep enhancing that even more, amplifying that even more. And, you know, as I become more and more senior, not just by age, but by experience as well, I think it is very important to share. It's important to learn what people are thinking, at the same time, care. I think these are all key ingredients that goes into becoming a human-centric leader.
Yeah, and I think it's such an important theme. It's certainly an important theme for me in this podcast I think, as we navigate 2021, Kishore, which is why I asked the question. And it was lovely. It was wonderful to hear that story because, as you say, that's fresh. That's only just happened to you. And so I think that's that's part of the privilege of the podcast, that kind of story can come out in conversation. So as we start to come to the end, let me kind of summarize things with you. As leaders of many levels in many geographies listen to this podcast, what is your kind of your golden plan for them then, as regards how they start to think about how they can be outcomes focused and be that outcome based leadership? What would you say really is just kind of maybe a 3-point plan for them as we start to come out of the pandemic, for them to think, I'm going to really nail this outcomes focused leadership piece? So how can they start? How can we help them with just a very simple plan?
So number one, we have to be outcomes focused. There is no questions asked. We have to be outcomes focused.
Yep.
But here is the key thing. Number two, we have to understand that we work with people. We work with human beings. So empathy and leadership, human-centric leadership, are going to be part of the equation for outcome-focused leadership. There's absolutely no questions again on that topic.
Right.
And number three is, we need to achieve the outcomes. We need to achieve them with people, and we need to achieve them with agility. We need to move fast. We need to be versatile. We need to be flexible. We need to learn. We need to adapt. These are all going to be very, very important, because fail fast is going to be very imperative.
Yeah.
The world has realized that a pandemic like this can cause so much damage to our time, to our lives, to our entire existence, right? So whatever we want to do, I think it is good to do it quick without wasting time, but at the same time doing it with people, and at the same time having achievable goals and setting the milestones for them and going after them.
Wow. I love that as an answer to help people understand how can they action this episode for themselves back in the office Tuesday morning, 9 a.m., wherever they might be in the world. I've got a final question for you, Kishore, which I don't know whether you're aware of, but this is it. I call it the insight. What for you is the most memorable piece of leadership advice that you've ever given or received? What would be front of mind for you, the most memorable? And I'm saying that now, and you are someone who worked with Jack Welch and in that environment within GE, so I'm intrigued as to what you might say.
Well, work with integrity. And to me, integrity is not just about honesty and not cheating. Integrity is about say-do ratios. It's about saying what we will do and doing what we say.
Right.
I think number one is integrity. That's the individual. That's the value system.
And that congruence that goes with what we say and what we do.
Yes.
Wow,
yes.
Which is essentially the leader's shadow that we cast within an organization.
Yes.
Kishore,
yes.
I love that. Thank you so much for taking the time again to chat with me and being part of the Leadership Enigma. I hope you've enjoyed it. It was wonderful and a great excuse to connect with you again, but you've been a superstar.
Thank you so much, Adam, for this opportunity. It was a pleasure to be here.
Take great care, and you and I will connect again for sure.
Thank you, Adam.
Join us again next week for more tips and strategies on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or our YouTube channel. And remember to get your daily learning to build success at www.insights.emeritus.org. Download the Insights app and start learning for free. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.